This is Actualize Freedom, straight talk on growing clicks and conversions on Amazon FBA from people doing it every day. Now here's your host, digital marketing acrobat, Danny Kenji Carlson.
Today's episode of the Actualize Freedom podcast is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader. Giving big thinking for small business. It's designed for e-commerce leaders eager to grow and protect their business. It's co-hosted by Jason Miles, Shopify store owner and educator, and Michael Veazey, an Amazon specialist. Just search for The E-commerce Leader in your favorite podcast app and subscribe today. What's up, guys? Danny Carlson here with the Actualize Freedom podcast. And today we have a ex-full-time primary school teacher who went from living paycheck to paycheck to building a successful business. And he's tried a lot of different business models, but he eventually landed on Amazon. And interestingly enough, he's located in Sydney, Australia, which is just across the water from me. I'm over here in Bali. And he focuses a lot on helping Australian Amazon sellers, which is a fairly new Amazon market itself, but a lot of people in Australia to sell worldwide. So it's going to be interesting to dive into. He's got a lot of things he want to talk about on product creation, using email lists and reverse engineering goals because he used to be a primary school teacher. So he's got a lot to say about that. So let's welcome to the podcast, Rafay Carter. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for that beautiful intro.
Good. So maybe a first good place to start is, you're over there in Australia, and what uniquely do you see in the Australian market or in Australian Amazon sellers in general that a lot of people might not know?
I think with Australians in general is that, we'll give anything a go. And I think because we have such a small population, it's like, we have the mentality of just, hey, let's give it a go and let's see if this can work. And I think that positivity really goes a long way in building something like replacing your income and then beyond, right? Because they're just willing to give it a go. And I think that's probably the biggest difference I see. Yeah.
Awesome. And would you say that most Australian Amazon sellers are focused on selling into the US market, or is there a lot of them that are only focused on selling in the fairly new Australian Amazon market?
Most Australian sellers, and they start about wanting to launch in Australia, and then they realize our population is so small that there aren't any people really buying there. So almost all Australian sellers are global sellers. So they'll start in the US and then they'll expand to the UK and Germany. So it's definitely more expanding for Australian sellers, for sure.
Yeah, and it's the same for Canadian Amazon sellers as well. For the most part, are selling international markets, but Canadian market is getting bigger. And a lot of people I know actually do quite well in the Canadian market. So slowly growing out there. But one thing I want to ask you, because you used to be a full-time primary school teacher, and you now are also teaching people how to have success on Amazon. So like, how is that translated from little kids to full-grown adults, playing with large amounts of inventory and money?
Great question, man. Look, I love teaching. I absolutely love it. It's just one of the things that I get pure joy from. And because I got used to teaching like complex ideas in really simple terms, with the kids, I used to teach literally 5 or 6 year olds how to play ukulele. So if you've ever tried to teach them something complex with fine motor skills, you have to really break it down. So it was the same sort of thing, but with Amazon, it's like, if you have a complex thing, you can break it down in really, really bite-sized pieces. That's how people can learn and implement, which I think most people miss on. Like, the information is too overwhelming. It's not bite-sized, and then they can't implement on it. So yeah, that's definitely a passion of mine. I love doing it.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about what you're actually teaching these students, because a lot of people, they teach like a very simplistic model that will work for some brands, but not a lot of other brands. And you have very interesting things to say when it comes to product creation itself. So like, what do you recommend for people like your students or whoever's listening, some tips for creating good products that are going to perform well on Amazon to begin with?
Great question, man. I think what people need to realize, it's 2020. It's changed from what Amazon used to be. And back in the day, you could just have a product and slap your label on it and it would sell. Most likely it would sell. Now it's different. Customers are wiser and they've gotten a better experience. And for you to create a product that's going to sell now, or create a product that actually makes a difference, is you need to map out that customer journey. And so most sellers, what they'll do is they'll think of the product and they'll think, once the customer purchases the product on the platform, that's it. And that's the end of the customer journey. But that's actually just halfway. There's so much more that can be done so that that customer has that beautiful experience and that you can actually genuinely improve and change that product for what that customer would use it for. And a great way of thinking about this, and I like telling my students this as well, is like each problem that a customer has, your product is a solution, but that is the first order problem and first order solution. There's another problem that comes after every solution. So every solution has its own inherent problem. So the way you want to design a product that's actually going to sell, that's actually going to help, is think about the first, second, and third order problems to that solution. So let's say, let's do an example of like, let's say you have a water bottle. You really want to drink a water bottle, right? So I'm selling a water bottle for you. So I've solved the first order problem of you need to store your water and take it somewhere, right? And the solution is the water bottle. But the second order problem is, well, okay, well, I've got a water bottle now, but maybe I need to clean it. That's a problem that's inherent with that product. So you can create that, you can put a cleaner with it, and that's a second order solution you solved. Then you've got a third order, maybe you need to store it somewhere or carry it, and then you put a carry bag. And so if you realize that each of your solutions create another problem, then you're able to create a holistic experience for your customers. And that's the best way to go about really having a product that's going to last for the long term.
Yeah. And is that, I would imagine that requires a lot of reading through reviews and just looking at where there are potential gaps in the marketplace, like what people are providing, but not also providing the additional solution for. Like, how do you go about figuring that out?
I mean, there's basic ways, right? So the first level would be, of course, check out the reviews. Amazon gives you those reviews that you can check out. It's like the wealth of knowledge. I think new sellers make the mistake of working hard and not working smart. There's a lot of free information out there. So instead of like banging your head against the wall trying to figure this new thing out, just read what's there. That's number one. The second thing is like know your market. I mean, it's literally the best time not only to be alive, but to have like an e-commerce store, because everyone that you want to sell to is online sharing what they care about. So you can just go on a Facebook group and see what they care about. You know, these passionate subgroups are all there and you can join them and find out. That's probably the best way to go about it.
Yeah, getting into the actual real customer language, which brings me to my next point, is you're a big proponent of leveraging lists. So like, what do you recommend for this? Like building email lists and then creating certain sequences that really work in a certain way? Like, what's your methodology here?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a couple ways to approach this, but inherently you need to remember that when you're selling on Amazon, you get to have those customers and sell to them, but you don't get their information, which is fair enough. You know, you're using the Amazon platform, but there's no point in selling where you can't build another asset. So obviously you've built the brand that's selling on Amazon, which is an asset, but the other asset you really want to build is your list, because then you can leverage it and sell other products. And so how that works is, let's say I have a customer, and they've purchased one of my products. So what you want to do is give them additional value, a value for value exchange, so that they're willing to give you their email, so that you can then email them when you have new products. So there's simple ways of doing this. The first one is providing an extended warranty. That's super simple. You could give them coupons for other products, or a VIP club. And this sounds lame on the surface level, but it's actually really cool for Amazon sellers, because since you're launching new products, those people on your email list could actually be product testers. So they get to be the first few that purchase those new products. And that's actually perceived as really high value for your customers. And so imagine you have a list of maybe 500 people and you've done a couple orders through. And so you're launching a brand new product under the same brand. You know that getting those initial early sales are crucial to get onto page one and really start solidifying your space there. So let's say you email all those 500 and even just 10% opt in, even 5%, right? That's 25 sales for free that you've gotten because you built a list. And it's a way of having an asset that's going to help you with all your future launches. And if you decide to sell your Amazon business, that is a massive asset that people are willing to pay for. So it's just starting as you intend on continuing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, and I would love to hear like what you recommend. Like, what have you seen work the best for your email sequences? I know lots of brands out there. Like, actually, someone I had on my other podcast, he had built an email list of 2 million people, and he had never sent them a single email. Like, he just had a great successful app company that you know, it's a great app and it built like that. But he was not doing any marketing to his email. So like, what do you recommend if people have this list? Like, how should they structure their email sequences, or you know, should they just be sending like one single email just to promote their new products? Like, how are you doing it?
Great question, man. Definitely a sequence, and lead with value. And I think sellers forget that they are customers. Like, we've been consumers our whole life. We buy things. So just run it, do a mental check by yourself, being like, hey, if this person keeps saying, hey, buy my stuff in my emails, is that going to convert? Am I going to really want to respond to that? So if you lead with value and you lead with where the customer is coming from, like, let's say they were buying that water bottle, like in a fitness niche, and you know that they have fitness goals. It's the reason that they've purchased it. So if you're providing value for what their intended use is for and the sub passionate group they're in, when you start promoting things like coupons and things like that, you'll be able to get a lot more feedback and a lot more opting in to that. So the general sequence you want to go with is the first two, you're not asking them for anything. You've gotten their email, which is great. You know, you may have traded a warranty or a coupon or a VIP club. The first two to three are just value, saying, how do you like your product? You know, talking about the passion that is in that sub niche, and then giving them another bonus and another value. So in the beginning, they make that connection with you as, hey, this person actually cares about me as a customer and is willing to give me things that will help me, not just random stuff. And going from there, then we start doing coupons and we're like, hey, we're launching a brand new product. What do you think? Hey, what do you think about this packaging versus this packaging? And then they feel like they're part of creating that that new product. And when they feel part of that, guess what they do? They share it with their friends. And that strategy right there is massive. Especially if you're designing new products, your customers aren't going to be like, you know, steal my product or anything. They're not going to do that. They're going to want to be part of it. And that's a big one. That one really works.
Yeah, and email can be so powerful. I think most people are not really scratching the surface of email. One of my mentors, his name is George Bryant. He's like the top paid digital marketing consultant in the world, self-reportedly. But he thinks of email in a very holistic way, what the customer journey. So like, as e-commerce business owners, I think we have to really look at like, what does the customer need to go through to get the desired result from the product? For some customers, there's four or five different things that they really need to do, right? So you can use email as the vehicle to help them actually go through that journey and get value from the product. And thinking of it that way, instead of like, how can I like one by one, like do these like little hacks that will make them more likely to get more views? Like actually just thinking of like, how can I actually get the customer to get the most value from the product and really love the product? Because even if you have a really great product and if they don't use it, or if they only use like 20% of the value of this product, then they're way less likely to leave a good review, right?
Well, that's the thing, right? And you've touched on something really important here, because I'm a bit like analytical or methodical, because I wanted to check what element really affected like the review rate, because you know a lot of Amazon sellers are kind of obviously obsessed with it because it's a review-based platform. So I did three different launches of three different products. And the first one was, I just created a product that took care of the first order, second order, third order problem and solve that for the customer without any follow-up email sequence apart from hope you enjoyed the product. You know, here's just a little bit of extra information, nothing crazy. I did that one. And then I did like the VIP club where they join in. And then I moved them on to a many chat sequence instead for my third launch, just to see the difference. The crazy thing is between email and many chat, not much of a difference. But between not having the email sequence set up and follow on and having one made a huge difference. So, of course, making that product and making it amazing is super important. So I launched a product, I think it was about like 5 months ago, with just that and with only three follow-up emails. And that one has like 150 five-star reviews now. And I'm not really asking for any reviews, just the automated sequence coming through. And then we've got the one where there's a follow-up with the VIP around the same time I launched the same one. And now it's sitting around 230 five-star reviews in that same period. So it makes a huge difference if you can connect to your customer and make them feel like, you know, that you know them and where they're going. And definitely not asking or paying for reviews. Oh my God, please never do that. Do not do that. It's against Amazon's terms of service. And yeah, you don't want to do that.
Just not a good idea, especially in today's Amazon landscape. And one more thing, probably from your teaching background is where you developed this, but I know that you're someone who's really good at reverse engineering your goals. Because one thing to be like, okay, I want to make an email list and I want this and everything like that. But a lot of people, they set their goals not really in measurable ways. Like, I want to build an email list. Like, that's just not any kind of tangible results. It could mean anything, right? So like, what is your process for goal reverse engineering?
For sure. I mean, I guess it starts with like what it is as a broad level. And most people don't even get to the broad level goal. But let's say you do. Let's say, hey, you know, I want to replace my income with e-commerce or with Amazon, for example. That's great. What is that number, right? Identify the exact number. Great. And then how much time do I want to do it with? So you've got a very clear target and you've got a very clear time frame. And then reverse engineering is like, okay, well, if I have this time frame, I want to get there by, let's say, end of December this year. Well, I've got 7 months. So what do I need to get done each month to be able to get there? How many products would I need to sell? How many products would I need to launch to get to that point? And so reverse engineering comes from really clarifying the goal and being honest with yourself. Because without a clear target, any direction is correct, which means you're not going to hit anything. And I think having a really clear target, if you can be completely honest with yourself, then you know the actions that you need to get there. And if you've set an unrealistic target, then that's cool. It's good for you to know that. So then you can actually set one that you're able to achieve with the time frame that you set. And so I guess the three takeaways that I want people to know with reverse engineering your goals is, firstly, have a super clear target. If it's a financial amount, a number, you know, if it's like a fitness goal, I have a metric for that. Like, I want to be able to do like 10 muscle ups, for example, right? It's a clear metric. The second, give yourself a time frame. Well, when do I want to do this by, right? And then thirdly, what are my daily actions? So what actions can I do to be able to get me to that goal? So if it was a muscle up example, you know, I want to hang on the bar for at least 10 seconds. Like, let's say that's where you're starting from. So if you can do those three things, you'll be able to reverse engineer any goal and you keep yourself accountable.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I think especially with monetary goals, a lot of people don't actually look what goes into it. So, you know, on Amazon, if you think, okay, so I'm going to have X amount of products with an average selling price of, you know, let's say 20,000 or 15,000 per month, whatever is right for your brand, and you want to make $1 million per year, then you got to do the math. Like, how many products do you have to launch this year to reach $1 million in a single year of products? And then if you're not actually launching that amount of products, then good luck making that goal, right? It's very important. And also in the agency side of things with my agency, one very important metric is like how many sales calls we're doing. And you get even more granular. It's like, okay, so how many inbound leads do we need to generate this amount of sales calls? And how many sales calls do we need to generate this amount of revenue and all these kind of things? If you don't figure out those things, then you don't really know if you're on the right track or not. And so like, it's very clear once you do really reverse engineer all of those things. So I'm really curious, like, what do you think are some of the most pertinent numbers to Amazon sellers who are reverse engineering their goals with an Amazon business?
Great question, man. And you're right. If you don't have those metrics and reverse engineer it step by step, like you mentioned with the agency, it makes it very hard to know day by day where you're at. So the number you want to be tracking, the first, like, this is the lifeblood of your Amazon business. It's net profit. So you'll see those crazy screenshots of somebody saying, you know, I made like, you know, 1 million in a month or whatever the case might be. And that's great. But let's say you're only making like, what, 1% net profit from that or something, right? The gross sales are very different to the money you're getting in your pocket. So you want to make sure that you're tracking your net profit. That's the biggest thing that's going to allow you to make a change in your life, because otherwise it's a machine that keeps going. I could say, you know, I've made $1 million in 10 days, but you don't know that I paid someone $100 for them to give me $50. Do you know what I mean? So you need to make sure that the money you're bringing in is actually something that's going to grow. That's the first metric you really want to track. The second is, and this is once you officially start launching, is you want to make sure you're in stock. You want to be able to track how many you are selling a day. Because if you know how much your net profit is, you need to know how many daily sales you're making. And then the last is like, okay, well, how many products would I need to launch so that there's not a single point of failure? And what do I mean by this is like, everyone wants to build like $1 million business, but they'll launch one or two products. The pressure of those pillars on that $1 million product is immense, which means if one of them takes a dip, or perhaps you're out of stock, or any number of things happen, your entire business starts swaying and starts leaning to the side. But if you have multiple products, your goal, it will still be achieved, but with less pressure on each, with less sales needed for each as well. So the metrics you really want to look at is net profit, your daily sales, and making sure you stay in stock, and having multiple products is the way to go.
Yeah, I really love that, because it, you know, it's really sexy and attractive to have a 100K per month product, but those products are generally quite competitive and have you know, high profit margins if you look at it on the front side. But on the back side, if you realize how competitive the PPC is and how cutthroat some of the black hat stuff is, then those profit margins shrink real fast. And I really love what you're saying about the numbers there. So Rafi, we're coming up to the end of our time here. I have one more question for you, which is, what kind of advice would you give, just on the same train of thought as setting goals for how much money you want to make on Amazon? What would you say to a beginner? Like, what are some like clear, concrete goals that you think a brand new beginner to Amazon could set to just like get up and get started?
Great question, man. I think the first thing would be, there's so many, and I'm sure you come across this with the people you work with, there's so many people that are stuck in information gathering mode. I'm not sure you can see it behind me, but it says your future is created by what you do today and not tomorrow. And I really live by that. There's so much information, and you can keep learning and keep learning and keep learning, but it won't mean anything until you implement it. So the very first actionable step for a beginner is, you will learn more from within the market than months and months and months of research. Like, within a week or two, you'll learn more by actually doing. That's step number one. Step number two, actionable step, is like, if you want to replace your income, that's great. Think about the long-term process of that. So if I'm selling a trendy product like fidget spinners, for example, or Himalayan salt lamps, they're great for that moment, but obviously they are trendy, which means that you're not able to forecast income coming in on the long term, and you're going to always be chasing the next fad. So think about your goal and see whether it's something you want to achieve in the long term, and keep it going. And lastly, there's an abundance of products out there. Don't be married to one product. Say, I really want to do this one. I don't care. I'm going to figure it out. You could launch anything. Literally, finding products are the easiest thing. You'll only realize that by actually launching and finding someone to push you and keep moving forward. I think the biggest thing that we have, and I'm sure, Danny, you can attest to this, when you first started whatever, you get stuck in your head a lot, and you're like thinking and thinking and thinking. And then when you finally take action, it's almost like you're being pushed forward being pulled forward, as opposed to really trying to drag yourself into it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I really know what you mean. And I got a little bit of FOMO as you're saying that, because I just remembered fidget spinners, and I realized that I left all my fidget spinners back in Canada and I haven't had them. I didn't feel any kind of separation anxiety for the last year and a half without my fidget spinners until you just mentioned it. So like, I might just have to go onto Tokopedia, like the Indonesian version of Amazon here in Bali, and look for some fidget spinners now.
I mean, you got to.
Awesome, Rafi. Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing your wisdom here with us. If people want to reach out to you or learn more about you online, where's the best place for them to do that?
Add me on Facebook. That's probably the best way. I mean, I'm always posting on there, and I think it's the easiest way without any barrier. If they have any questions, that's the way to go.
Heck yeah. Awesome, guys. And we'll put the link to Rafi's Facebook profile and website and all that stuff in the show notes at kenjiroi.com/blog. So check out that for any of the show notes and resources mentioned here. And if you guys haven't already, go leave a review for the podcast. Please do so on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you got. Or you guys can go easily to ratethispodcast.com/AF, then for Actualized Freedom. And it just opens up whatever app is on your phone, so you can easily leave a review. And really appreciate it. If you guys have been a long-time listener, it's the best way to say thank you for the content. And so thank you again, Rafi, for joining us and sharing all your awesome advice with the audience.
Thanks for having me.
For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit kenjiroi.com.